Welcome, everyone. This is Queer Mormon Transhumanism, the 11:30 session. This presentation is sponsored by the Mormon Transhumanist Association. As technology accelerates cultural upheaval, Mormon transhumanists champion prophetic visions of human potential. This is number 332, like I said, Queer Mormon Transhumanism. Before we begin, a few items. We ask that you silence your cell phone to be respectful to the presenter as well as other attendees. It is the mission of Sunstone to host thoughtful and respectful dialogue. Please keep that in mind when engaging in the Q&A portion of this session. Those who cannot abide by those guidelines should refrain from commenting. As you listen today, we invite you to reflect on your connection and access point to the topic. At Sunstone, we never ask anyone to adopt the opinion of others, rather to instead practice curiosity as an act of humility and empathy. Perhaps you'll find things you hear today that will align with your that will align with your own views, and perhaps you'll find yourself challenged by them. At Sunstone, we believe that wrestling with ideas is a critical part of learning and growth. This session is being recorded, and you'll be able to purchase it after the presentation ends at the registration desk just out behind you in the hallway here. Also, please take advantage of our symposium special by subscribing to Sunstone Magazine. 7 issues for the price of 6 at the registration desk as well. This is a 60-minute session, so we'll end at 12:30. We ask that you keep that framework for the presenter, and then lunch will be after. A little bit about this presentation. In the broadest sense, transhumanism is the idea that we should use science and technology to improve humanity. Transhumanists tend to have a grand and optimistic vision of what the future of humanity could achieve or become. Mormons do too. According to both, the future of humanity is godhood. This includes the queer Mormon community too. Queer Mormon transhumanism is a story of how queer folks rise into godhood. Blair Osler is a philosopher specialized in queer studies, is a leading voice at the intersection of queer Mormon and transhumanist thought. She's an author publishing her first book, Queer Mormon Theology and Introduction, which is being published by Common Consent Press next year. She's a board member of the MTA, the CTA, or Christian Transhumanist Association, as well as Sunstone. She's the mother of 3 children and 1 subpar husband. We will now turn the time over to Blair, and please join me in welcoming her to present.
Okay, since we have a small crowd, this is going to be way better. I'm going to have people come sit up a little bit closer because I'm going to ask you all questions too, because I want you to walk away with something. I don't want to just talk at you. I want to talk with you. So I'm going to have people come closer if you feel so inclined. I know. And actually, I'm going to take that microphone. Hey, Drew, I'm going to make you work for your dollar today. And I need you to pass this around to people. Okay. So, there we go. Okay. The first thing, this is going to be a little bit harder to see, but that's okay. So, we're here to talk about queer Mormon transhumanism and how we find our place in the cosmos and how science and technology is changing all that and how we can make that compatible with Mormonism. And I'm going to have that figured out in 1 hour. That's right. But before we get started, I want to know why you are here and what it is you are looking to get out of this. If you have any question pondering your mind, or if you just walked by and thought, I'll walk into this room, or anything like that, I want you to think about why you decided to come to the session and what you are hoping to get out of it. Drew, I'm going to have you walk around with the mic and hand it to people so it gets recorded for the Sunstone stuff.
Can't quite reach.
Yeah, but you can walk a little bit. Just a little bit. There you go. Okay, so hands. Why are you here at Sunstone? And why did you come to this session? Sorry, not Sunstone, this session. Can Judith right here in front? Yep.
Oh, yeah, it's kind of going to be short.
You guys back? You may have to stand up a little bit, but that's okay. We're all friends.
I can't really stand up. But I am here because I'm queer, and I know you and your work. And I know about transhumanism, so I was curious to hear how you put it all together.
Okay. Cool. Perfect. Pass it on. Someone else.
Just more general curiosity about what it's all about.
Awesome. Were you at my session last night? Were you? Yeah, that was you. Okay, awesome. Cool. Hopefully I won't repeat anything.
I'm here because you're awesome. And
correct answer.
I like
move
listening
on.
to what you have to say.
Thanks, Parker.
Yeah, I'll second Parker. I'm always interested to hear what you have to say.
Oh, okay. Cool.
I'm here because you're awesome. And also, I think that many people underestimate the realization that Mormon transhumanism itself is queer inherently. Mm-hmm. And I love to hear you talk about that and help people understand it. You do it better than probably anybody I know.
Anyone, you guys, anyone.
Well, curiosity. I'm Steve. I'm Bringhurst. I'm from Alabama, visiting friends and family. And I'm here at the seminar and here at this particular presentation out of curiosity like the rest. And my particular angle, having moved away from Mormonism in my own personal life without regret, but with a certain amount of understanding and, family ties. The angle of my curiosity is about how, in your presentation, you're going to square the circle of reconciling Mormonism with what is politely referred to as an alternative lifestyle, mm-hmm. though, I think of it more as just the way we live our lives, not a lifestyle, not something we adopt to become part of something necessarily. It's who we are.
Awesome. Glad to have you here.
Hi. I'm here because I'm queer. Queer and here. And also, I don't know a ton about transhumanisms. Would probably call myself more of a post-humanist or anti-humanist.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
But I do like Donna Haraway.
Who doesn't?
Right?
Exactly. It's almost like required reading for all transhumanists, really.
So good. Mm-hmm. So good.
Okay. So you're already great. Thank you. In the back, you might have to stand up a little. It doesn't go that far, so you have to stand up to the mic. Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Well, I just came out of curiosity, but the queer part really interests me.
Okay.
And the other part that really interests me is the transhumanist, because I know nothing.
Okay.
And, I mean, I've heard a colleague who's an anthropologist who studies Mormon transhumanists give papers at various professional conferences.
John Bielski.
Exactly. He's a friend of mine.
We love John.
That brought me here because I wanted, since I'm also LDS by background, although been quite distant from the church for many years, I wanted to come and see what y'all are doing and what y'all are about. And,
awesome.
And I like the idea of squaring circles.
Cool.
And Donna Haraway is just really amazing.
Yay! Right behind you.
I'm here. I'm LDS, still go to church, and but I'm very concerned about the queer issue and the way the church has been addressing it or not addressing it, and the struggles that gay members have in the church. And I'm just curious to see if you've got some interesting solutions to propose. That's what I'm interested in.
Sweet. Anyone else? All right. Okay. Well, this is great. Now I get a better idea of where you guys are at and what we can talk about. And we're going to go ahead and start off with the basics and go from there. And I'd love to just really have lots of time at the end for Q&A so we can just sit and talk about whatever you all want to talk about. So first of all, what is transhumanism? So the most basic understanding of transhumanism is that we should use science and technology to radically enhance the human condition. Now, where our imagination takes us from there can go to all sorts of neat and interesting places. But transhumanism generally is the idea that we should use science and technology to improve humanity. Now, Mormon transhumanism is this outlook, but within the context of Mormon theology. In Mormon theology, we have this idea called theosis, or divinization, or apotheosis, and it's the idea that we can all become gods. Raise your hand if you grew up thinking that someday you get to become a god. Kind of? Okay, most of the people in the room. So with this idea, transhumanist goals and aims align really well with that idea, the idea that someday we're going to be able to become gods and we'll have godlike powers and duties and responsibilities. So Mormon transhumanists really love the doctrine of theosis. We're all about becoming cool gods to do cool god stuff and make more cool gods. So what is queer Mormon transhumanism? So this can be a little bit tricky narrative, because Mormon narrative generally has been dominated with the idea that there's one God, Heavenly Father, and that's the God we're all going to be like. But that doesn't really work for everyone. We have a cool, awesome Heavenly Mother too, but she doesn't really do or say much, or much has been revealed about her. That's changing. And so, but women are kind of going to become that kind of God. But there isn't really an archetype for queer people to say, well, what kind of God am I going to be? A lot of people have taken that to the understanding that there are no queer gods, but I see it differently, of course. So queer Mormon transhumanism is incorporating queer isms with Mormon isms, but with transhumanism. So science and technology are going to help us get there. Science and technology are going to be the tools that we use to help incorporate queer people into our Mormon narrative. And this is already happening right now. So transhumanists are particularly primed for all sorts of queer-friendly ideas. One of them is morphological freedom. So morphological freedom refers to a person's right to modify their body on their own terms via informed consent to refuse or use advanced medical technologies. So one prime example of this that happens in the queer community right now is on the trans population. So the trans population will definitely be interested in all sorts of technologies that allow themselves to fashion their body and express their gender in ways that feel more authentic to them. This can be something as simple as changing their clothes, a very rudimentary technology. It could be something like dyeing their hair, or further hormonal treatments and hormonal replacements, gender confirmation surgery, things like that. So there are all sorts of technologies and things available to people in the trans community to allow them to embrace this idea of morphological freedom. But with morphological freedom also comes with the idea of the ability to refuse said technology. This can be best seen in the intersex community, to which intersex people have often been subject to technological interventions without their consent, especially when they're not medically necessary. Of course, the debate is complicated, and there's tons of details we can get into on that. There are obviously certain times to intervene and give someone medical attention without their consent, but the majority of intersex surgeries that have been performed have been in violation of human rights acts, and now, anyway. They weren't at the time, but they are now. And morphological freedom is the idea that maybe we don't impose a technological application to someone without their consent unless absolutely necessary or life-saving. Another interesting idea among transhumanists is the idea of cognitive liberty, which refers to a person's right to mental self-determination and control over their cognition. So this is huge in the trans debate right now. What happens when someone says, no, I am not this, I am that? There is an entire community that points at you, tells you you are a specific gender, but everything inside you says, no, I am a different gender. So this is the idea of cognitive liberty. Now, how we engage in cognitive liberty and how we allow for different types of identifications and self-determinations is definitely complex, but this is the open door for that, that people have the right to determine themselves and how they want to fashion their bodies and how they want to express themselves to the extent that it's not oppressive to others. Again, really tricky when we get to how it doesn't oppress others, but that is the general idea. Okay. Awesome things that are helping the queer community right now are reproductive technologies. So in Mormon theology, we have the idea that we're all going to become gods, right? And we're going to do cool, awesome God stuff. And one of the cool, awesome God stuff we're going to do is to create more cool, awesome gods. And how is that going to happen? Does anybody know how the cool, awesome gods are going to get made? Sex. Boom. 200 points. So the general idea is this is going to happen through sex. And the general idea usually is that it has to happen through vaginal, penile, penetrative intercourse. And that is the only way that these little gods are going to be made. But I'm thinking that's not the case because we have all sorts of ways of creating little children here on Earth right now. And if we're using these interesting creative ways here on Earth right now, what is here on Earth is going to continue in heaven. Am I right? So what we have is interesting reproductive technologies, and that's changing. So reproductive technologies such as artificial insemination and in vitro fertilization, surrogacy. So these are the idea that you take a sperm, you take an egg, mix it together in a petri dish. I'm being super reductive here, so doctors in the room, don't judge me. You mix it together in a petri dish, put it in a womb, and then it's going to be born. Well, the really interesting thing is in Mormon theology and in the church handbook, we actually have something that says that these children are born in the covenant. These children are already sealed to their parents and born in the covenant. They were not created via vaginal penile penetration, yet they are still considered to be children in the covenant. So are children born through surrogacy. So are children who are sealed to their parents via adoption. So we have all these ways of creating eternal families on earth that are different than vaginal penile penetration. Yet for some reason we have stuck in our heads that in Mormon theology that's the way it's going to be, but that's not even the way it is right now, not even according to the handbook and policies of the LDS Church. Moving forward, we have even more interesting ideas about where technology is going to take us. So right now it is possible to make a child with the DNA of three biological parents. What happens is a mother, well, usually it's the case when the mother has a mitochondrial disorder. So they take the egg and they basically suck out the insides of the eggs, take out the mitochondria, insert the a donor's mitochondria, so two women in one egg, insert the sperm, mix it together, ingest it in the uterus, and boom. 9 months, out comes baby with the DNA of three parents. So if you're thinking about the idea of, okay, in the next life, it's important that we all have our own biological offspring. Well, are we going to not seal families that are biologically related? Are we going to tell two women who have their DNA in the same child that they can't be sealed together? This is actually happening right now. And with extra time and with time and more technology on the horizon, it's going to be a matter of time before two women are going to be able to gestate and have their own daughter. It'll be a lot more difficult for men because cis men, because you know, you don't have a uterus. They're kind of magical. We still can't recreate them. But this does promote or suggest some very interesting things on the horizon for how little gods are going to be made. Other thing that's on the horizon is uterus transplants. So this is actually being done right now too. A healthy uterus is being taken, usually from someone who's been done using it, and implanted into a woman who was born probably with a defective uterus or absent uterus. And the healthy uterus is put into the mom, and then the mom is able to gestate a baby. This is still on the verge of newness, and not all pregnancies are successful, but it has been successfully done more than once. So if you think about the implications of what this means for trans women, it will not be long that a trans woman could have a healthy uterus implanted into her body to which she could gestate her own biological offspring. So when people want to talk about the gender essentialist views of, well, you're not really a woman, well, how woman is woman enough when a woman can gestate her own offspring? That seems like a pretty womanly thing to do. So when we take into account all these amazing tools we have right now, we have science and technology and all these cool things, and we apply them to our narratives, it just doesn't make sense to think that reproductive technologies and making little gods is something as, I would almost dare say, reckless as vaginal penile penetration. On the horizon, there's going to be all sorts of technologies that can be able to have genetic selection and all sorts of ideas and things about how we can give our children the best start. We already do this right now with things like prenatal vitamins, right? We're already trying to impinge on the development of our, or I shouldn't say impinge, enhance the development of our children before they're even born. Even before they're gestated, you're actually recommended to take prenatal vitamins. All right, so future technologies. Oh, I started talking about that. So uterus transplants for trans women. Of course, this will coincide with hormonal supplements and things like that. A biological offspring of two female parents. This is already possible. It'll only be time before the sperm will probably not be as necessary. The biological offspring of two male parents, and of course this would probably have to include some sort of surrogacy. And another idea is external wombs. Now this is a really, really interesting idea and actually really kind of ethically complicated too. So the idea of an external womb is that you'd be able to gestate your offspring, obviously, in something that's not a uterus. Now this has all sorts of implications for parent-child bonding and all sorts of things, and there's ethical concerns for that, so I don't want to go into all of them, but I do want to acknowledge that they are there, and if anyone has questions about that, that's the thing we can talk about more in the Q&A. But I did want to acknowledge that external wombs have strong ethical concerns. Okay, so here's the big problem, though. The family proclamation. Am I right? How do queer people fit in with the family proclamation? Well, this is a little less science and technology and a little more philosophy, but one of the most important things is that people like to read that gender is eternal as gender is static. And that's not what eternal means. Eternal does not mean static. Eternal means existing forever. And for something to exist forever means it's in a constant state of change. So let's use God as our example here. Joseph Smith taught in the King Follett sermon that God was once as we are now, was human and then became God. Well, if God existed forever, how did God exist before God was God and God was mortal and then became God? If God is eternal, God certainly isn't stagnant. God is constantly changing and developing and growing. This is how we get the doctrine of eternal progression, again, which not all prophets have agreed upon, but, you know, welcome to religion. So when we look at the family proclamation, the idea of gender being eternal, gender doesn't mean it's static. It doesn't mean it can't change. It doesn't mean it can't fluctuate. It doesn't mean that we can't experiment and play with it. It just means gender exists forever. Now, what we want to do with that, well, we can get really creative. Okay. The important thing is creating a queer cosmology within Mormon theology, and science and technology are helping a lot with that. But we already have the previous framework to work within this, because the more and more I study Mormon theology, I can't unqueer it anymore. I can't see it anything but queer friendly. So when people talk about the idea of not fitting into the, or a queer person not fitting into the idea of the eternal salvation, I'm just thinking, well, what book are you reading? Because I see it totally differently. I see us as totally fitting into this narrative. Some of the prime narratives that queer people like to use to demonstrate the queerness of our theology is through the creation story. So we learn about this in the temple, too. So where did Eve come from? Where did Eve come from? How was her body made? Adam's rib. Adam's rib, boom. 200 points for you. Good job. So Eve's body was created from the DNA, or the rib, of Adam's body. And who else assisted in that creation? Was anyone else there? In the narrative, God and Jesus helped, right? In the narrative, God and Jesus helped. So when we look at it, three male personifications created a female body. Now, if that doesn't constitute as godly creation, I don't know what does, other than God creating woman. So if we look about the ways our narratives are telling us that there are definitely queer ways of us creating people and more gods. There's all sorts of weird undertones and things that are in the Bible that I want to leave plenty of time for Q&A. All sorts of other stories and narratives we could get into. One of my favorites also is the narrative of Jesus. So Jesus came from a queer family. bet you didn't know it, but it was a queer family, and queer, I'm using it a little more colloquially and broadly than I am LGBT. But Jesus was born from a woman who was impregnated by something or someone or in some way that was not her husband. And the custom of the time was that she should be stoned to death for being impregnated in a way that didn't constitute her male partner with vaginal penile penetration. But she was impregnated a different way. And what do we call her? The most beautiful and fair of all virgins and all sorts of wonderful things. And we got whole religions that worship her and all sorts of wonderful things. Jesus came from a queer family where his heavenly father, in some capacity with the Spirit, impregnated his sister and mother, sister in the gospel Mary, but mother earthly Mary. And somehow I'd like to think that Heavenly Mother had a hand in all this too and sanctioned this queer family. And Joseph came in the picture and said, hey, I'll be the adoptive dad. This is awesome. So Jesus has this incredibly strange, weird family in Mormon theology, yet we insist that Mormon theology consists of, well, you need to be sealed to a heterosexual mom and dad, and then you're going to have your biological offspring as your brothers and sisters. That's not even what Jesus's family is like. So when we get into queer cosmology and how our religion's going, it just keeps getting queerer and queerer. So what does this mean for queer Mormon families? Well, Mormon theology places heavy emphasis on eternal families, from the creation of polygamy and sealing people together, and Mormon families being sealed together ever. These are really, really queer and strange ideas. And the funny thing is that the emphasis placed on eternal families is so much of the motivation of why queer people are developing these narratives, that queer people do believe families belong together forever, not just metaphorically, not just like, oh, this is a cool narrative, but no, we should actually make it so queer families can live together forever alongside heterosexual families. So the awesome thing about Mormonism, and I'll even say transhumanism, even though, you know, it's probably a different religious verbiage than transhumanists would like to agree with, is we have the idea of continuing revelation. There's so much more on the horizon. This is just the beginning of queerness, if you will. And once you add Mormonism and transhumanism into the mix, I can't see any way that queer people don't fit into this narrative, and that why we should be excluding queer folks from this narrative when there really is no end to the potential and possibilities. All right. So if we're creating a queer cosmos with transhumanism and Mormonism and all sorts of cool, interesting technology, we need to ask ourselves, where do we fit in the cosmos? Where is our place in all this? So whether you're queer or not, this is something, a work we're actually supposed to engage in. In Mormonism, we have all sorts of scriptures to support the notion and the idea that the celestial kingdom is right here on earth. It's not somewhere out here. It's not far away. It's not metaphysical. It's an actual tangible reality right here and now. And not only that, we've been called to prepare it and cleanse it and have it be the heaven that it was prophesied to be. And that's what we are doing right now. We are creating the queer cosmos right now. It's not out here. It's right here. Thank you.
We'll now do a Q&A. If you guys want to just come up to the mic here, that'd probably be the easiest.
And if we have time, so it depends on if you want to hear it or not. So I ended up writing a poem called The Queer Mormon Transhumanist, and I was going to share it, and then I got scared, and then I thought I would share it, maybe not share it. So, okay, would you rather do the Q&A than the poem, or just the Q&A? Or Q&A. The Q&A. I can't unqueer it, you guys. So would you rather do the Q&A than the poem or just Q&A? Raise of hands for Q&A. Dang it. Okay. I shouldn't have said that. Okay, so I'll warn you. I was listening to a lot of Hamilton when I wrote this. So it's almost like half rap, half poem. And what it is it's actually my own kind of journey from coming from a relatively conservative LDS background to becoming a Mormon transhumanist, a queer Mormon transhumanist, and how that evolution kind of took place. The poem is a little bit longer, but if it's something you want to hear, I would love to share it with you. But and I'm not going to lie, you know, I mean, does anybody follow my work online? If you follow my work online, you know I'm just like unapologetically vulnerable and just say things probably far too directly than they ought to be. So, okay, raise your hand if you want to hear the poem or not. Yes to the poem? Okay, that's everyone. Forget it. Okay, so I will give you the poem. If I were really cool, I'd have it memorized, but I don't because it's really, really long. So, and you can think of your questions while I'm reading too. And as I said, I was listening to a lot of Hamilton when I wrote this. Okay. Hi, I'm Blair. Introductions are in order. First of all, I'm no one's son. I'm someone's daughter. You remember me. I'm that girl. They excommunicated my father. They took a patriarch away from their mother and daughters. I was 14. It was Easter Sunday. They kicked my father out of heaven that day. What a way to celebrate Resurrection Day. I didn't commit the crime, but they certainly made me pay. Anyway, well, I grew up fast and found my own way until one day things were no longer okay. I still remember what happened that day. That Mormon boy groped my breasts and body and laughed as he assaulted me. I was only 16 and so shocked at the scene that I froze as his friend laughed and did nothing. They told me to repent. When he was the one who took my consent. But the guilt of being a victim would not relent. But even so, I sat in the pews waiting for the atonement as that same boy blessed the sacrament. He gave me the water and bread so that I could repent. And then suddenly it clicked and it all made sense. No matter how hard I tried, I could never repent for the sin of being a woman, a sin I didn't invent, but alas, a sin I resent. My gender was the sin that seemed to prevent me from being the one who got to bless the sacrament. I know that's not exactly what they meant, so you'll have to excuse my sincerest dissent, but they discriminate against my gender, and was that not their intent? You see, so many men around me had lied and cheated, but it didn't matter to them so long as patriarchy wasn't defeated. Asking for a table or for a seat at the table isn't because I'm conceited. Why couldn't they understand that all that I needed was to be treated as a person with autonomy? I'm sorry if I'm getting heated, but they told me I was vying for authority. But isn't that what he did? So why is it wrong for me to be greeted with the same rights and privileges and opportunities that he is? Even after I searched, pondered, and pleaded, a man in a dark suit told me to be quiet and be seated. I should have known better then just to leave it, but I found a young man who made me rethink it. It's the strangest thing, but with him, I felt completed. I wasn't certain if I would ever be treated with the compassion and kindness in the ways that he did. I was going to marry him, you see. We made our secret promises, and he gave me a ring. We wrote each other letters for 2 years while he was serving. He made me so happy, I didn't mind he kept me waiting. Yet, with another man, through the bonds of friendship, we were creating a second relationship that was also worth saving. Yet in a world made for couples, three is perceived as misbehaving. But I never lied. I told the truth even when my heart was racing. You see, love isn't love unless honesty is remaining. Yet for some reason, for me to take another lover meant I had to say goodbye to my other, and I don't understand why we couldn't just share with each other. And it's for reasons like these that queer love goes undercover, back in the closet, take cover, I never get time to recover, remove the covers. It's not a secret. I don't march to the drums of monogamy, and I know people squirm when I say the words queer polygamy. Yes, it's part of my faith's controversial history, and I admit the principle wasn't practiced perfectly. Most mistakes were a product of patriarchy, and let me explain, the problem isn't loving plurally. It's that not all participants had their autonomy. You say, now, Blair, you're making up words and chanting off key, but I offer my sincerest apology. It's a habit I picked up while studying philosophy. Deconstructing old meanings and replacing them with new is a matter of practicality. Yes, plural love is a matter of practicality. It's a product of my Christianity, because not all plural love is defined by sexuality. How else are we meant to join in Christ's body if not through plural love and ingenuity? You see, the law of plurality isn't about sexuality. You're free to disagree, but I refuse to let plurality be defined by its enemies. Have you read D&C? I'll tell you what plurality means. It means that I'll catch you and you'll catch me. It means living together as a community. It means building Zion as brothers, sisters, and siblings. It means it takes a village to raise our babies. It means there's beauty and diversity. It means plural compassion and humility. It means charity. But even if plural love were defined by sexuality, guy or girl, it's all beautiful to me. You can blame it on my bisexuality, but I won't apologize for loving queerly. I refuse to swallow the lies of heteromonogamy, and that's fine if it works for you, but please stop telling me monogamy's the right way to be. Please, your right isn't right for me. God, give me grace. Without love, what the hell are we even trying to save? Let's lay the foundation for a new road that needs to be paved. We cannot procrastinate. I'm out of patience. I don't have time to wait. I think waiting is a serious mistake. Have you considered all that's at stake? Death comes for all of us. Death doesn't give, it takes. Trust me, the haters are going to keep continuing to hate, but now is the time for us to elevate. They say the resurrection happens by priesthood power, yet people I love keep dying hour after hour, and my gender keeps me away from that priesthood power, and slowly the magic of priesthood begins to sour. After all we've been through, I'm still not convinced the brethren's love for me is true. Priesthood power was meant for women too, so they'll have to excuse me while I take a seat at the table too. God herself is not a narrative dictated exclusively by you. She lives. She lives for me and you. Have you forgotten? She's your mother too. I am made in her likeness. Was that not what they professed? Have they not read the book of Genesis? I was clothed in holy robes as a priestess. I withstood, face veiled in a polyester dress, unable to utter the words, lips tightly pressed. I was searching for a woman's godliness, yet so casually dismissed. Did the patriarchs mistake my kindness for weakness? I will not recoil in fear and cowardice, because I am about my mother's business. And as my sisters have witnessed, I'm moving forward. I'm now a Mormon transhumanist. It's even better than feminist, a myth too good to resist, and a myth I trust that will persist into the future as another religious myth. Why? Well, let me tell you the gist. If you're anything like me, you're beyond thirsty for a more robust theology. Flex your imagination with me and picture a heaven in your mind, and you'll see a world where disease is no longer deadly, a world where families actually live eternally, a world that celebrates our diversities. Imagine plural love combined with technology. Do you really think God became God without his community? Transhumanism built upon ideas of singleton supremacy are just another form of tyranny, and if transhumanism isn't for all people, then it's not for me, because in this capitalistic economy, your gain is a loss for me. Love doesn't need to be hoarded in scarcity. My God isn't a tyrant who collects unjust authority. God is God because they learned to love when loving wasn't easy. That's why Zion requires love and ingenuity. I'm not waiting for a technological singularity. To become God's requires cooperation and synergy with love applied universally, unconditionally. Imagine working together more wholly to accomplish visions I can only describe as holy in an effort to become more godly. You see, there are people like me who are lucky to be alive. When natural selection tried to kill me, technology helped me survive. My existence wasn't relegated to the archives. Instead, I'm here to thrive. My body was cut, bleeding, and open on an operating table, and my conditions and vitals were not stable. But I was convinced my body was able to deliver three children before they closed my body with staples. I did it three times in October, March, and April. The injuries were severe, but they weren't fatal. Fatal is the key word here. Death tried to take me from all I hold dear, but technology allows people like me to live year after year. But I'm not too proud to admit I still fear. I fear the unfulfilled potential of my peers. We set up mental blockades that need to disappear. If we really have faith, we must pedal and turn the gears. Let's fulfill the prophecies we hold dear by bringing immortality and resurrection near. No, I'm not joking. I'm being sincere. Transhumanism works to the faith we revere. God's message is here. And for me, it's pretty clear. If we want salvation, we need to volunteer. Have we forgotten our roots? We come from pioneers. I know it sounds foreign, but you don't need to sneer. It's all in the scriptures, my dear, heard by those willing to hear, even if it's brought to your attention from a mouth that's queer. I feel it deep within my bones. These are more than honest lies. And like all religions, tales get revised. And like a lover too good to deny, the sun will arise and reveal to our eyes truth brought forth amid the lies. I was wrong. There's no need to cry. Priesthood power was always ours. It was only in disguise. Forgiveness is something we must all recognize. And all I'm saying is that we have to try. If God is God, they are wise, and they will appreciate our sincerest tries to love beyond the boundaries that left us to die. But if I die before my work is done, I trust in my daughter and two sons. The love I have for them makes me come undone. Though they are different, they may work as one. And if I drop the baton, they know to pick it up and run. I trust they'll come back for me after the war over death is won. And by the graces of God above, let the next generations lead with love. Not just some of the love, but all of the love. All of the love our species is capable of. And maybe that will be how we join the gods above. So we can take questions now if you want.
Hi. Thank you. And I had this question during the presentation, and I actually think you maybe addressed it just like a little bit in the poem, which I really enjoyed. But a lot of these technologies feel dystopian, not because the technologies themselves are bad, but because they're occurring in a capitalist landscape. And I want to ask the question about class and how transhumanism addresses the issues of these technologies, as exciting and utopian as they might be in a landscape in which not everyone has access to healthcare, and there's just gross income inequality. And then also, so the question of class, mm-hmm. and then also if you have any thoughts about how that might connect to Mormonism and Mormonism's implication with capitalism, but also its more revolutionary beginnings.
Yeah, no, definitely. That is a great question. So accessibility technology is definitely a concern and something worth addressing. As far as like the transhumanist movement itself, it's composed of many different people with many different political backgrounds and many different political ideas of what that looks like. I would say generally most transhumanists are interested in accessibility. One of the problems with accessibility is that when something new comes out, it's never going to be accessible to everyone right away the first time. So for example, not everyone has access to great prenatal health care right now and throughout the world. So does that mean no mother should have access to great prenatal health care? No, we need to continue to develop technologies and continue to give them to people, but we need to work also congruently at the same time with having it accessible for other people. So that's definitely one of my personal top concerns is technological accessibility, even literacy and understanding. We have a serious problem because if you took this into account as, you know, we could have technologies that create a species stratification to where, you know, your species could be something purchased for the highest bidder in a capitalist economy. And that's not really a future I want to be a part of. Part of the problem with that is, though, is that we also have like a science fiction problem where everything seems to be surfaced around dystopian futures and dystopian technology. And it's not to say those aren't bad. In religion, we have Satan, right? Satan's our dystopian view. But I don't want to give Satan all the airtime. Satan's functional and useful, thanks. We're all scared of Satan now. But Satan isn't where I want to give my airtime. I want to give my airtime to God. So I would love to see more science fiction films that talk about the idea of utopian societies, accessibility, and all sorts of things, and these narratives that like, hey, technology is helping me. It's doing good things. And granted, it's not perfect, and we need to work on that. To your second question within Mormonism, oh my gosh, yeah, totally. So Mormonism is so funny in that we have things like polygamy and renewal of the earth and using herbs in their season and mild barley drinks. Like, the fact that we aren't wild child hippie plural loving children is like beyond me, because like that is our theology. Oh, okay, it's not beyond me. It's like, you know, McConkie and McKay, sure. But the theology itself really lends itself to this idea of communal living, consecration, and all sorts of things. So I would love to see more of that narrative being brought into the space of Mormonism. I mean, there's a huge, I would almost say, I'll call it the socialist scare, you know, or this idea that like socialist programs and things like that are something to be feared. I'm not saying I necessarily identify as a socialist, but I definitely think we could do a much better job of communal living, accessibility, and making people making sure people have accessibility to the things that help them. Great question.
Okay, so like on a practical level, as someone who is a practicing, believing Mormon,
yeah,
who really loves the theological implications of Mormonism, we as Mormons really love doctrine more than we like theology. We like to have the dogma rather than having, you know, more up-in-the-air conversations about things. Mm-hmm. So on a practical level, how can we have these conversations with people who are both religiously and politically conservative without making them feel threatened?
That is such a good question. No. So first, I would just agree with you. Yes, I think there is a certain amount of like legalistic code in LDS Mormonism to where it's like, if it threatens the authority structure, we're going to reject it. But if it sustains the authority structure, we'll embrace it. And my answer usually to that is our theology comes from the scriptures, and our doctrine, our scriptures are doctrine. So the more you can talk about the scriptures and incorporate that into the theology, that sets an authoritative base for LDS Mormons to be like, hey, it's in your scripture. How do you square that? If it's not implied that this, then what is it then? And so that usually is a way to talk to them in a shared authoritative space, the scriptures. So of course, go on my website, and I have like tons of things written with all sorts of scriptures cited and all da, 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 da. So go look at all those and use those for sure. I think you're right as far as like being in a conservative environment, it's tricky. Trying to talk about these really queer ideas. At the end of the day, it really helps to meet other queer people, like, you know, meet a bisexual person who's like, hey, I like God and Mormonism and stuff too. And so the more you can integrate queer people into straight spaces and things like that, it creates, it breaks down the boundaries between the us versus them narrative. Those queer people outside of Mormonism, those queer people, it's like, nope, they're right here with us. So inviting queer people in and using the scriptures.
Kind of dovetailing off that, I'm not a believer in biblical myths, but I can see Mormons saying, isn't this sort of like the Tower of Babel?
Mm.
Are you trying to somehow create God, but not in God's way, to somehow circumvent what he's doing by some mysterious power that we don't understand?
Yeah.
And so how can you kind of mesh that with what Mormons think of how God does things and how we're supposed to deal with things?
So my question in return would to be kind of to deconstruct one's idea of how do they know when God is speaking. And usually this is associated with, again, whatever religious authoritarian is in, you know, the position of president or prophet of the church. So in Mormonism, we only have two prophets. We have the prophet that's alive and Joseph Smith. All the other ones can usually be dismissed in one way or another. So you have to square it with the prophet that's alive and Joseph Smith. So with that, a lot of people think that, okay, once the prophet speaks, the thinking's done and things like that. And so when they think about how do you know who's speaking for God and who's not speaking for God, the complexity is saying, well, how do you know when the prophet is speaking for God and the prophet is just speaking as a man? And that's tricky, and there's like no easy way to get around that. You can't deconstruct that. So someone would quite easily come up to me being like, Blair, you're fashioning God in your image. And I would say, actually, you're kind of right, because I am made in the image of God, and it's a symbiotic relationship in which I am reflected in God's image, and God's image is reflected in me. And make no mistake, the patriarchs are doing the exact same thing. Heavenly Father didn't just invent himself.
come from my present background. I'm a spiritual outsider as far as Mormonism goes. Mm-hmm. Faith is based on taking somebody's word for something that they can't prove. I don't have that kind of faith.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm comfortable with dealing with the eternal questions with a simple common answer, and that is not enough data to make a determination at this time, and I'm okay with that too.
Mm-hmm.
But you mentioned capitalism, and one of the problems I think with capitalism is that it's based on an idea of prosperity, and I know of no sustainable model for what is considered prosperity. It's no wonder they call it the dismal science as far as economics goes. But I think there seems to be a search in what you're doing for a sustainable model in transhumanism that doesn't rely on resources that can be exhausted. Working outside of and avoiding practical limitations. Transhumanism and the idea of eternal progression. Finding a way, a sustainable model.
Yeah, no, sustainability is definitely a transhumanist concern. I mean, this is where I think a lot of like environmental conservation comes in as well, and which is so funny because in some ways I'm very, very conservative. I preach a big progressive game, but I'm very conservative in the idea that we should be using our resources more carefully, that we should be conserving them and being conservative in the way we allocate different things and the way we live, that we shouldn't be living beyond our means in a sense. And I mean that in a communal sense, not just in an individual sense, that when we're behaving recklessly and using things beyond our means, we aren't creating a model of sustainability. So I think that's an important part of transhumanist goals, the idea that we should be able to have sustainable ways of living on this planet. A lot of transhumanists talk about the idea of terraforming other planets and moving out and, worlds without ends and things like that. And I'm totally a proponent of space exploration and terraforming. I think it's wonderful things. I mean, we're terraforming Earth right now. The question is, are we terraforming it in really, in sustainable ways, frankly. And so I don't think the answer to sustainability is necessarily going out somewhere else and colonizing something. It could be part of the equation, but we also need to take a good look about how we're using the resources right now. The good news is they're not mutually exclusive goals. So hypothetically, if we can go to Mars and set up camp on Mars and get plants and animals and humans to thrive on Mars, the likelihood that that's going to help us in our endeavors here on Earth are pretty high, because if we can go grow plants on Mars, we could probably do a better job of what we're doing here on Earth with these resources. So, yes, sustainability is very important. Transhumanists are definitely concerned with those goals, and that's more than environmental. It also applies to social and governmental policies as well.
Well, there are philosophical questions of how much is enough on a personal and a social level. Is there enough to go around? And have the ability to consider allocating space versus population.
Absolutely. And the question is, how much space does one family need? How much, depending on where you live in the globe, a family of six can fit in a two-bedroom apartment. But yet sometimes we have these mansions and all sorts of things about a family of two or three. And so when we talk about allocation of space, this is where my conservatism comes in. And I'm very much, no, less is more. You don't need that much space. You don't need to indulge in certain things, and maybe you don't need three boats and nine cars and 14 vacations a year. But I'm a big time Grinch, though. My kids hate me around Christmas time. I'm like, it's excessive and overindulgent.
Yeah, I didn't mean to kind of shut this off into an environmentalist
that's okay
sort of thing, but I think it's something that carries over in other areas that you're
Absolutely, absolutely.
As far as making room for everybody on an equitable basis. Mm-hmm. Of course, you're going to have differences in the stages that people are at and the way that things are allocated. But the idea of ethical fairness, I think, plays into all of that. And I get the idea that you're very concerned with that.
Definitely, definitely agreed. Thank you. Thank you. One last question? Anyone? All right.
So I'm impressed with the fact that you, you're so open on your blog and in these presentations, and you're expressing your opinions, and you're still having this kind of dialogue with Mormonism in a positive, constructive way. And yet you're also, it doesn't appear that you're sort of actively engaged in trying to, lobby the church or get it to change its policies, maybe just hoping that on an individual level people will be persuaded. I'm just curious, you know, I know so many people who've like left the church because they're frustrated with its approach. Mm-hmm. You seem to just simply be being yourself and expressing your opinions and maybe, I guess, hoping that others will be persuaded. I don't know. Can you kind of talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I can sum up my relation with the church in 2 minutes. Sure. So, yeah, it's definitely been an up and down journey, to say the least. First of all, I kind of distinguish a little bit of difference between being a member of an institution like the LDS Church as opposed to being Mormon. For me, I couldn't not be Mormon even if I wanted to be. I couldn't even be a post-Mormon because my post-Mormonism would be so Mormon, it would still be Mormon. So I don't see any sense in denying who I am and the lens in which I view the world. So I wholeheartedly embrace my Mormonness. As far as my, we'll call it my Latter-day Saintness, as far as being a Latter-day Saint, it's also an emotional connection and an emotional tie. I've been a Latter-day Saint my entire life. I don't know any different way. And so when people talk about leaving another institution for another religious institution, I happen to be quite loyal and committed. I don't want to leave. I don't want a new religion. I don't want a different institution. I want the religion that I committed myself to. And I feel like my religion should be committed to me as well. So as two committed partners in this relationship, this is something we have to work on. That doesn't mean we're always going to sleep in the same bed because they've been real big jerks and they deserve to sleep on the sofa for a while. To put it gently. But at the same time, I have no interest in divorcing myself from my religious institution. I think the most important influential way I can bring about change is just by being myself. I don't think lobbying and things like that necessarily works. I think it needs to be more an internal grassroots effort rooted in love and compassion and commitment, like, than for something on the outside being like, I just want you to do this and da da da. And it's like, I don't just want you to do this. It's internal. I'm here with you in this. You committed to me. I committed to you. And you need to make this work just as much as I need to make this work. And so there's plenty of people on the internet, if you haven't heard, who are comfortable telling me I have Stockholm syndrome or whatever else they want to tell me as a queer educated woman. I don't know why she wastes her time with the LDS Church or whatever, but I don't think it's wasting my time. It's very much a part of my faith journey, and I mean, it would be more inauthentic for me to leave the church than it would be to, you know, pretend that it's perfect. So I just got to be me.
We would like to thank Blair Osler and the MTA for sponsoring this. Before you go, transhumanism is ethical use of science and technology to expand human abilities. Please visit their booth behind you in the hallway to meet with a representative, join, or learn more about Mormon transhumanism. Thanks for coming.